You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break, that shape our lives, and where we find the meaning in life and share that with one another. And now our guest on this next hour is going to be Frank Towner. And Frank, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. This is exciting.
It's good to have you on the show. What I do to start the show is generally ask people, what's a story that would be helpful to get to know you a little bit, or what are some of the labels that you wear, so that we kind of have a starting point for what will happen over the next hour.
Well, and I thought about that. You gave me some prep questions. And first of all, it's great to be here and to share this kind of information. So oftentimes you don't get a chance to do that,
right,
and share it with others that don't know you.
Right.
So I guess right now I'd say I'm a father, and I'm, as you know, I'm a professional clown.
Right.
And I'm an avid motorcyclist.
And Harley, that's not Davidson. A derogatory comment.
That's right. That's right. And I found in thinking about it that, you know, one's really shaped. I love the title, you know, Made of Clay. One's shaped by their parents, and and I was raised by a conservative, self-employed, self-made father, and a very sensitive, aware mother, and that has really helped to shape me to be who I am today, to be as free-spirited as I am conservative.
Right, right. That is not a combination that we often hear.
It's for sure. We'll talk more about it.
Yeah. I grew up in rural Midwest in Northwest Missouri, and so people, my uncle didn't see a problem between his being a member of the Sierra Club, listening to NPR and public television, and also being a member of the NRA, and having considered the John Birchers. He just did not necessarily see a contradiction in all of those things, because he was rooted in making life the life that he lived. And doing it well with respect to the land, which was his attention to the environment.
Neat. Yeah. So, I can relate to that.
Yeah. So yeah, we wear many labels, and hopefully we wear them lightly. I think that's what you're saying in part.
Yes.
So you wanted to start, and you had a very very interesting collection of music when you sent me your songs, and a lot of Allman Brothers, but also a lot of other music. Charlie Daniels,
Grateful Dead, Hank
Johnny
Williams.
Cash, and Hank Williams. Now that's quite a collection. I've seen more diverse, but I haven't seen them. And you're cutting through a swath of American history. So anyway, we're going to start with Allman Brothers' "Blue Sky."
Excellent.
And we will pick up the conversation from there.
All right.
Keep on flowing, and don't worry about where it's going.
that was Allman Brothers' Blue Sky from Eat a Peach in 1972. That's been a while back. Anyway, our guest on this hour is Frank Towner. And Frank, why'd you pick that song? And
when I was in seventh grade, I was turned on to the Allman Brothers Band, and it kind of became the band that I related to, and some of my friends did. And this song was a particularly favorite song of a girlfriend back then. And I did a whole mural with the lyrics about Walk Along the River and Sweet Lullaby. And it's always been a part of our life. And now with my wife, Melanie, we mm-hmm. appreciate the Allman Brothers. And we believe that we live the blue sky.
Uh-huh. That's cool. So you were talking about kind of defying some expectations, cultural expectations about fitting stereotypes. What's the kickoff experience that kind of launched you in life, or how did you kind of, what are the experiences that kind of brought you to this self-awareness?
The first thing that really affected me, Eric, was again my father and my mother. My father, at the age of 16, I went out to get a job, and I came back. He said, "How'd you do?" I said, "Well, they didn't hire me." He said, "You could be self-employed." I go, "What am I going to do, Pop?" He said, "You can sell firewood." I'm like, "Okay." He was a road contractor. We had a pickup truck, and he knocked down trees for jobs, and we went out, and I started to cut firewood at 17 years old. And I really, and I had a newspaper article written about me at one time, and I never forgot the words. It was "Foster to temper. Temper to foster for the respect for the dignity of work." I thought, wow, it's pretty good because I worked for myself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the other thing that happened along the way was I was a BOCES student, attended BOCES in Monroe County, and I was in the commercial art program, and I was recognized as a leader back then because I asked questions.
That's all you have to do.
And they said they plucked me right out of the group, and I joined an organization called VICA, Vocational Industrial Clubs of America. And this really provided me with an opportunity to affect people, to have a positive motivation with them. Mm-hmm. And I went to leadership training, and I spoke before groups. And we had a wonderful year in my senior year representing the organization across the state and across the country in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. And Bruce Pease, I will say that, I called him just a few weeks ago and thanked him. Uh-huh. At my age now, 55 years old, when I was 17, that had a major effect on me.
Yeah, and it's great to remember and to even know where they still are, those people, 38, 37, years later is a great thing.
Yeah, something. And it continued. Erica, when I left high school, I was chosen as the class speaker of the high school. There was no valedictorian because there was too many people at that high a level. Mm-hmm. So they put up a list, a poll. And I was selected in my high school. Very great honor. And I did it and did it well. And I kept that tape as well. I've got it. And when I went to college, had a very positive effect with my art teacher. And that helped me to move ahead and realize some things that you just can't do things half-ass, if I can say that in the air.
Yep.
You need to put it all out on the table and really do the best you can. And it's interesting how people affect your life. Because I went on to RIT as an art student, and another art teacher had an effect because I went into commercial art, and it was tight, and it was rigid. And he would always, I'd come in, and he'd ask me, "Frank, did you draw any lines today?" And I kind of laughed at Bob Heuschman, and I said, "Well, yes, Bob, I did draw some lines." And he really moved me emotionally and personally into fine art, painting, sculpture, and printmaking.
Uh-huh.
And that became part of what I really wanted to do, and it was really a part of me.
But it was in reaction to the commercial art, you're kind of bucking the commercial art direction.
Yes. Yeah, it was just too tight
right.
for this person, Frank Towner, and he recognized that, and I got my Bachelor of Fine Arts, although I've never worked in art.
Right.
We can
right.
talk about that.
Yeah, no, and I would, and I would like to, maybe now is the time. What is it? It is not many. I was encouraged to go to the art school in Kansas City, as instead of going to college. And you know, it's also a training ground for Hallmark artists and stuff. I mean, but it also has there's also a serious art school there. And I, coming out of rural poverty and having worked since I was 11 to kind of help support my family, I couldn't make it make sense. So what I did was I angled for a scholarship to Cornell, which I indeed did get,
mm-hmm.
need-based, but full scholarship. The art has always kind of stayed there, and my work has always had that feel to it, which people don't necessarily get, don't understand that. So how was it that you, with these very practical, you know, selling firewood skills as a teen, industrial BOCES system, gets a BFA, and then you don't use it?
Isn't it funny? And it's a great segue into the other part of this thing, Frank Towner, because in college I was introduced to an organization called Camp Good Days and Special Times. It's a camp for children with cancer and their families. Uh-huh. And as you know, and my listeners will now know, it all kind of happened all at once. When I was a senior in high school, I was on the art and layout staff of the high school yearbook. And we needed to publicize the yearbook. And I had been called a clown before, so I said, well, why don't we have a clown?
Why don't I live up to it?
Yes. And we can call him Crossroad the Clown, because that was the name of the high school yearbook.
Uh-huh.
And all these things really shaped me at that point. If you look back, like you're saying, putting the pieces together, I was involved with...
So the yearbook was Crossroads. You became yearbook. The clown, and you're now Crossroads the Clown.
That's right. And I went to MCC for 2 years, and the art teacher there who had an effect on me was Chuck Haas. And... then I was introduced to Camp Good Days, and when I went to the first year of camp, I went there because I was a clown. They said, oh, you're a clown, you'll be great for the kids, and I was a counselor. And I got done with that first summer experience in 1980, and I looked at what had happened and looked at myself and said, wow, kids, outdoors, and recreation, this is really what I want to do. And I went back to RIT, and I went to the counseling center,
Career set place or whatever.
And I said, where can I make $100,000? Because I had this self-employment thing of making a lot of money in sales and working for myself. And I had this recreation art background. Where can I make $100,000 working with children and recreation? And they kind of looked at me sideways and said, you might not.
Yeah.
But I was moved so much by it that as I went through my time at RIT, I did my art, and I enjoyed it very much, and I worked at the YMCA, mm-hmm. which, as you know, I still do. And when I got out of school, I went on that path. I worked at the YMCA, worked for the Division for Youth.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with both PINS, Persons in Need of Supervision,
right.
and I worked at a high-security detention center. And as we'll talk,
my
real
purpose...
All through
the YMCA.
The YMCA was part of it.
They were sponsoring programming there, and you would...
Nope. It was a separate thing. So I would do that job, and then I'd go to the YMCA, right. and I'd teach swimming and gym. And again, you make me think so much about what happened. It was through RIT working with migrant labor workers. That's where it started. They had mm-hmm. a program, and through the migrant labor worker system, I met people who were involved in Division for Youth, and I got a job there. And I really liked working with youth who had a challenge, because I was a handful when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that change happened in 11th grade, going back again.
What BOCES. Was a handful about you?
I was, my father would call me a hellion, running the streets from the time of 7th grade. In 7th grade, we had a club we called Satan's Choice, real nice.
Yeah.
And we
You're
just
going
hung
to the
out.
Dark side.
Oh, yeah, we were in the 7th, 8th, 9th grade. 10th grade was kind of questionable, but in 11th grade, I found BOCES. I found the fact that people really wanted you to succeed. I accepted the schools, the principals, my teachers, who said, you can do more. And I realized it was like an epiphany that said, right. you can do more, Frank.
Right, but why did you hear that message in BOCES and not in those other schools? What about learning wasn't learning for you in those earlier years?
And it's people that come into your life. And I believe that the people there recognize leaders within the group. And somehow, because again, going back, I asked a lot of questions.
Right.
Why
right.
did this happen? Why do you do this? And it was, it was Bruce Pease and a handful of administrators who stepped up and said, you can do more.
Yeah.
And it was part of the high school experience, the principals at my high school, Brighton High School, also cared. And that's when I realized they're not trying to fight me.
Right.
They're trying to help me. And it made a complete turnaround in 11th grade.
Right. And did you ask a lot of questions before 11th grade? Were you kind of a challenging student?
Yes. Yes. I would step out of the realm, out of the box. Mm-hmm. It's great talking with you because it brings you back. In 7th grade, rather than doing the art projects, I was able to solder. And I soldered everyone else's work. And the teacher recognized me for my work, mm-hmm. although I didn't mm-hmm. get my piece done. In high school, the health class that I had, I'll never forget, it was, you know, we were talking about sex and drugs mm-hmm. and rock and roll, not rock and roll. And I was not afraid to ask questions. I was not afraid to talk about sex mm-hmm. and drugs. And I failed the exam, and the teacher says, oops, you failed the exam, but you get a C for class participation. And it was those set of things that made me realize that you step up by asking questions.
Right, right. And it sounds like you had a style of learning that you really had to be hands-on.
Absolutely.
And it had to be verbal and not book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the interaction like this is so exciting rather than to read it and recite it or give it to you in print.
Right. No. And we lose a lot of real skill and creativity by driving people away from education who just need to learn with their bodies and their hearts and their minds all integrated together. And we don't do that now. And that's a tragedy.
And we try.
Yeah.
I know that I do.
Yeah. No. And where you are now is you're persistent to do it. Let's go to another song. What would you like to go to for this next song?
Well, I would like to, at this point, I think that I put the Charlie Daniels, that I put Long-Haired Country Boy on that.
It's there.
Okay, that's kind of like a philosophy.
Okay, here we go, Charlie Daniels.
People say, I get stoned in the morning, I get drunk in the afternoon. Kinda like my old blue tick hound, I like to lay around in the shade. And I ain't got no money, but I damn sure got it made. Cause I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. Don't like the way I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone. Preacher man talking on TV, putting down the rock and roll, wants me to send a donation about my soul. He said Jesus walked on the water, and I know that is true. But sometimes I think that preacher man would like to do a little walking too. But I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. You don't I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone. Mm-hmm. nothing at all, but I will take another toll. But I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. You don't like the way I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone.
And that was Long-Haired Country Boy and the Charlie Daniels Band.
Yeah.
And our guest on this hour is Frank Towner. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. So, Frank, do you want to say something about that song before we move on? Or?
Yes. Again, it goes back to high school, and we saw Charlie Daniels, and that was one of those songs that just kind of rolls along and just lets you be yourself. And if you don't like it, that's okay.
You can take it home and pack it if you don't like it.
That's right. As long as it's not hurting nobody else in the process, we'll just move right along.
So I can't resist this. Yeah, you know, there is no longer any long hair, and there's almost no hair.
That's right. It's so nice.
But so there's that piece of humor, but also it's a kind of a segue into how have you changed. And what's turned out in ways you hadn't thought it would be, and what has just made you more resolved in what you learned early on?
Big question.
Yeah, big questions. Yeah.
And there's a part of that, and we touched on it earlier, is an inconsistency or incongruent part of me that I've pretty much stayed the same since my high school years. There's a strong part of me that says I want to help other people. I want to, impart a positive attitude with people. Mm-hmm. I want to encourage people. I want to lift them up. And there's that other part of me that's just as happy to be alone and take care of myself and not really bother with anyone at all. Mm-hmm. At the same time, at 55, having children is a dynamic change because the focus goes on them. Mm-hmm. And Melanie, I now with two kids in college, Thomas and Clement are in college, and Cassidy, a senior in high school, we're looking at ourselves at that change and what we're going to do together. And I realized that as I've matured in my work area, especially, in philosophy, that the acceptance of other people and what they do is very important. Mm-hmm. If they feel strongly about what they're doing, it's a positive thing. It's not hurting other people. It's not demeaning of themselves or people or our community. Then God bless them. I'm going to support them. And there was a part of me that was a little bit more rigid.
Uh-huh.
Thinking if it didn't fit into what I was doing, I didn't care to listen or take the time. I will take the time to listen and share with anybody.
Right, but that wasn't so true 10, 20 years ago.
Although I started to develop that point. Mm-hmm. When I got out of college, I was a little bit not that way. I was more rigid. The relationship that I developed with the kids at Camp Good Days, kids with cancer, mm-hmm. really allows one to look at themselves and say, wow, mm-hmm. it's not that bad. Let's live that indomitable spirit.
Is that how indomitable spirit?
Spirit, they have. It's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. How did you learn to? I mean, you're always going to be a larger than life presence. It's your personality as a clown. You ride to your shows on a motorcycle with your clown outfit on. I mean, it's very funny and very endearing. But what experiences forced you to take a smaller space in the world? Because I think that's the flip side of being open to other people's agendas and stuff.
Yeah. My father's death, 1978, died of cancer, and as my good friend and founder of Camp Good Day said, people don't die of cancer, and that's a whole other issue we could talk about. Right. Well, people die of a failure of some body part due to the cancer in them, and right. and cancer, as I'll just, I will get on my box, we're not doing enough to fight cancer. And Camp Good Days has a mission 2020 to eradicate cancer by the year 2020. Mm-hmm. But it was my father's death, and at the same time, I was in the hospital with a blocked intestine in 1978. And being so ill and in such pain for such a period of time and then recouping was an enlightening experience that time really doesn't, the time that you're ill is forever, and the time that you're not, you've got to remember that every minute counts.
Right. And, so it doesn't the distance from that hasn't diminished its lesson.
No. And it happened once again here in Ithaca that I was in the hospital for 10 days, and it caught on the lesion, I guess, in my stomach. And coming out of that was again a wake up call, I guess, to say, hey, talk to people, listen to right. people, be appreciative for what you've got.
Right. But you were about 19.
Yes.
18 when your dad died and when you were in the hospital.
Yeah.
And so he had just imparted that wisdom about self-employment just
That's
before
right.
that.
Yep. And I think about my dad every day.
Yeah.
Some
yeah.
way, somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad died when I was 7, almost 8. And so we have that in common, losing a dad too young. But it's also at the same time you were both developing a bigger person and also pulling back.
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And since then, I think I can honestly say that that's when I just started getting through getting out of high school, being involved in MCC, Monroe Community College, liberal arts, and pursuing an art career. And then Camp Good Days was introduced to me shortly after that. And it all happened pretty quickly. And I don't know if that happens for all people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. happening for my children.
Right. Right. Well,
but it happened for me, and I can look at it.
We all have different stories about how we come to know more of the fullness of life. And for some people, that happens early, maybe way too early. And for some people, it happens more in the 7th or 8th decade. I mean, there's mm-hmm. just there's just my mother went through a number of traumas with her mother having cancer for 5 years and then dying at home, but being bedridden most of those years, and she died when my mother was 12, and that. Totally may set a level of anxiety and fear that my mother couldn't shake, even though she had 7 kids and raised them well. And but seven. in the last 4 months of her life, being diagnosed with terminal brain cancer was what she. It was the occasion that she said, "I'm going to live it fully," and she did. And there were almost no signs of fretting or anxiety with her, and she was 79 years old. And to my knowledge, that was the first extended period of her life that was free of anxiety.
Wow.
And so people learn in different places in different ways. And you know, sometimes the hardest teachers teach the greatest lessons.
Very good.
You talk about your kind of your also how... How did you come to Ithaca? How do you navigate Ithaca, being a person of a very conservative bent, but also a very free spirit? I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how do you feel that this place is your community? Because for so many of us who were here in the 70s, we felt that it was the rhetoric of inclusion, the rhetoric of progressivism, but absolutely zero reality when it came to fundamental moral and political differences. So how is it that you kind of find a niche here now? And what's changed in you and what's changed here?
Great question again. First of all, I'm rooted with my wife's family. Melanie's family home that we live in is 7th generation. My kids are the 7th generation to live in that house in Lansing.
So that's 200-plus years.
Yeah. Yeah, give or take, right. 1860, yeah. give or take. So 150
years.
Yeah, yeah.
So, right. I'm yeah.
Bang, bang, bang.
Back. Yeah, yeah.
And that... was what brought us here initially, was the fact that here was an environment. I had been married before, and we had no children, and it was okay that we separated, and Melanie and I found each other and found that here was a place where we could live in a rural environment. Our kids could go to a school that appeared to be good, Lansing mm-hmm. School District, mm-hmm. in a community, in, that included Ithaca,
right,
that was progressive, that had art, that had theater, that had food, that mm-hmm. had college. And we said, we're going to make it here, you know, hell or high water, we're going to make it.
Right.
And if I got to cut firewood again and plow snow,
right,
this is where we're going to do it. And when I came, Eric, it's funny, I came with three resumes: fundraising, public relations, and recreation.
Wow.
So depending on where I went was a resume I pulled out.
Right.
I applied at the YMCA, and they didn't have a full-time position. And I worked downtown, and mm-hmm. it kind of rolls back into the answer to your question, at IACC, Ithaca Area Church and Community Daycare Center,
right.
held in the First Presbyterian Church.
Yes.
And
with satellites at the Methodist and First Baptist.
Yep, and the Baptist.
My son
good.
Participated. He was the only white boy in his group.
No kid.
And it was there were a couple of white girls, but there were always many kids of many colors, and that was such a powerful and, I think,
yes.
important impact and, on his life.
And although I was only there 8 months mm-hmm. in that position as director, it gave me a great introduction to Ithaca
mm-hmm.
and the people that were here, and it was great. I like that very much. And the people that I met there, I'm still friends with
mm-hmm.
and still see and communicate with. And then when I was recruited to the YMCA, because I was volunteering, I've always volunteered too. That's a part of my life. Melanie and I are both volunteers, and we've imparted that thought with our children. To volunteer gives back, but it gives as much back to you as it does.
Right.
Kind of like clowning. They say, well, why do you clown? Well, every time I finish clowning, if it's a paid job or a non-paid job or I go to the hospital and visit, I come back full, and mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. exciting. So direct answer to your question is that experience at IACC, realizing that I've got this rural grounding
mm-hmm,
in a house and the property that's around us that able to hunt and fish and live outdoors, and we have animals,
mm-hmm.
but I've got all the resources of Ithaca here and the people that are loving and accepting. And I just, I gained strength on that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And we are a small metropolitan area, but you can live in the rural area and live kind of a different set of values even at the same time as you step into other networks, other communities. And I think that is probably more the reality that we haven't explored as a community more widely than the more stereotypic progressive politics or stereotypic conservative politics, but how we can actually all occupy the same space and do it with respect.
And as we progress, I don't know if this is the
position now at the Y.
I've been at the Y 19 years. Mm-hmm. I came on as program director, and the Y had an advancement program. Mr. Grinnell was my CEO and a good friend, and I advanced to senior program director, associate exec, and now I'm the CEO.
Right.
And one of the visions that I had was an outdoor education area where we bring people back into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you can be, just like you said, you can be downtown and you can do things and have all of this exposure and cultural experience. But right up the hill on Route 79, we have 109 acres of untouched wooded property. And we did a walk yesterday.
And this is west, towards Watkins.
Yep. And it's just 2 miles out of town right next to Eco Village.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And a lot of people don't know about it. Yesterday we had a walk, and we walked with one of our members. And she's Chinese, and she brought her daughter with me. And she really hit it on the head. She said, you have so much to offer at the Y, and it's nice, and the community's good. And just a short distance from here, you have all of this woods that people can come into and get back to themselves, I think is how she put it. And I thought, she summed it up in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it kind of answers what your question, that you can go a short distance and be in the woods. And the parks and things that we offer here are available for people to clear their heads. The Japanese have what are called therapy gardens or therapy woods. They purposely have woods for therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that in the research to design and plan for our property up there.
What makes them therapy woods?
I think it's as simple, and reading about it was, it's as simple as going into the woods and being with yourself.
So it's the intentionality that makes it different.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And going further, there's what's called vision quests, where people will go into the woods on their own, alone, for certain periods of time, a couple days, a week, and intentionally going out to find yourself, to find that vision. And sometimes you can't explain it to people. It's as simple as getting in the woods. But right. Some people aren't woods people.
Well, but also I think, you know, some people don't understand when you learn kinesthetically, physically, or experientially, those ways of learning don't translate well to other people who've primarily learned through intellect or emotion. And what you described as not fitting in school kind of implies a kinesthetic or kind of a learner that's grounded in experiential stuff. And we haven't really created an environment where we challenge people to become aware of that and to do that. My experience in Shared Journeys, which is my nonprofit, is that people who have the most issues with anxiety and depression have the least fully developed physical body relationship with the world around them, and they feel more at risk of events that they can't understand or control, and that feeds the anxiety and feeds the depression. But that's my own take. You're offering a space where people can become intentional about it, and one of the reasons people love Ithaca is because of all of the natural environment around us. And I imagine that many of us use it, but I imagine it's like New York City. You can live there but never go to the things that make people come to see it.
That's right. So,
What music should we go to next?
Well, talking about my kids, let's do Cassidy.
Yes.
The Grateful Dead.
Okie doke.
Silver string. Own design. Nothing to tell them. The
chores be yours, I'm done with mine. Very well now, let your life proceed by its own design. Nothing to tell now, let the words be yours, I'm done with mine.
To WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and that was Cassidy by the Grateful Dead. And our guest on this hour is Frank Towner. And Frank, this is the name of your, you named your third child for this song. How did that happen?
That happened. My first two children were named with family in mind and close people. My son's Clement. Clement Prescott Towner is my wife's maiden name, Clement, and her father's mother's maiden name, Prescott. Mm-hmm. Thomas Towner is named after our good friend Thomas Sheraton, who passed of cancer several years ago. And his middle name is Peter, my brother-in-law's name.
Right.
Which, the night that Thomas was born, we were thinking of names and talking, and my brother-in-law, to his credit, goes, Peter's a pretty damn good name.
But said, they're all named after your in-laws.
Yeah, it works good. And when Cassidy was born, I always liked the name Cassidy. And even if it was a boy, I wanted to name Cassidy. Yeah, Cassidy is an Irish boy's name. And Jan is her middle name, named after my mother. My mother passed in December of 1994. She had nervous muscle disorder.
That would have been a couple of years before Cassidy was
born. Yeah. And so remember my mom and Cassidy. It's a great name, and she fits it real well.
Yeah.
And fits the song real well.
And when you name a child after a parent who has died, I named my son with the middle name Arthur was for my stepfather, a man who stepped into my mother's life and made it possible for her to let go of her two youngest children. She had seven children over 20 years, and he bought her a new house and a new piano, and they set up, and they had 5 years together before he died of cancer. But he allowed her to shift her attention to him. And they were very much in love, but also very much the timing was perfect to allow Chris and I to get off on our lives together. And so in my honoring him is to give Jacob's middle name is Arthur.
Nice.
For that very reason. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to go back to some of the questions that we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, how do you work with others who are not like you and whose values may differ dramatically from yours? And how do you address with integrity the issues that you care about while still honoring the space for them to do what they need to do?
Again, a great question. And never more than right now is that important in my life regarding my position at the Y as CEO. A YMCA is very diverse, and you work with many different people because there's no criteria for who goes to the Y except that you're human. And working with people to succeed in their goals and the goals of the YMCA is part of who I am. And I think that the timing for me is important, and when I speak and show people about the YMCA, because it's so important to listen to what other people have to say, because they've got knowledge about things that you don't know about. And unless you accept them and allow them to tell you what they're doing and explain themselves, you're really missing something. So I thrive on it. Uh-huh. I love to get like this with you, although you and I have known each other from the past. But to meet a new person, to meet a new person and actually take the time to listen and talk. And if your visions can meet, great.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, that's okay too.
Right, right. The Y has had many iterations over the years. It's been different things in different places, but now it's providing space for exercise and health and well-being. It's provides some after-school daycare, swimming lessons, and all those basic things. There is some concern that it's moved more to serve middle and upper middle class population, but yet you still how do you balance that tension?
And this is another thing that my biggest challenge people have asked me, Eric, what's your biggest challenge as CEO? And it's to get the word out that the Y is a charity organization,
a nonprofit charity organization.
Last year, we just ended our fiscal year. We provided 2,000 scholarships at a value of $155,000. And that is the big core of our mission. And the Y has brought on new branding, and never has the Y had as open a door as they do now. And our organization, locally especially. And it was part of my mission, my goal as a leader of the Y, to open the doors and let people in, no matter who they are, and to follow the pillars of the YMCA of healthy living, youth development, and social responsibility. Mm-hmm. Social responsibility being one you touched on that doesn't include money. Isn't a fundraising event. It's providing an opportunity for a homeless person to come to the Y and shower and have a place to shower and be warm and then go back to wherever they go, or providing food or providing clothing or getting people in the woods to walk.
The earlier versions of the Y would have had some educational components to that social responsibility piece. Is that part of it now? Or
Yes. Okay. Healthy living and social responsibility blend at that point to provide everything from nutritional lectures and people to come in and talk professionally and to talk about your health, whether it's mental or physical health. And we try to touch on all those elements of healthy living. Because what is healthy living? It doesn't mean you work out on a treadmill. It may be that walk in the woods or interacting with other people.
Yeah. One of the healthy living a lot of times is just having a number of varied relationships.
Yes.
And people who count those things and share journeys. We have, in looking at some of the literature and looking at the experience of people in shared journeys, those people who are most resilient have 30 to 70 people that they somehow interact with. And it may just be in a perfunctory sort of way, but they're people who know what's going on in their lives a little bit, the cashier that they see on a regular basis or somebody else, a letter carrier, but also people who are friends that you don't see very often, but they're important conversations. But you need about 30 to 70 people in your life to kind of have the depth of relationships to be resilient through crises.
And I'm doing good.
Yeah, you've got you're kind of off the charts. The issue for you would be and some of those it's kind of figuring out where does it go both ways. You're an extrovert, and you've got a lot of stuff going out. And the issue with a lot of really these relationships is that it kind of goes both ways.
Yes. Yeah. And you make me think about a couple friends that I have on that, so many that are either, politically right side of the aisle to the Green Party.
Right.
The ones that are health conscious or the ones that aren't. And you love them all the same. I talk about the casket carriers. Who are the guys who are going to carry the casket? I'm going to need those and a few more, just to what do they call it, the Guard Legion or something.
Right. Yeah,
it's fun.
Right. The Honor Guard.
The Honor Guard.
Yeah. And what do you do kind of on a daily basis or a weekly basis or a monthly basis? What do you do to take stock of your life, to restore yourself, or to at least get it clear about where it is you are? What are the practices, the things that you do to take care of your mind and your heart and your body? And I ask it in that big way, and we have time to spend with it, but it's to get people to hear what others actually specifically do, not what you would ideally do, but what do you actually do?
I physically go to the woods. I'm an avid hunter, but it's not about the kill. It's about being in the woods and being in nature.
Right.
And there's something about the solitude of sitting in the woods and I can count the many times when I've come out of the woods and said, wow, I figured it out, and I can come home and be totally calmer than I was when I left.
Right, right.
The other thing that's funny, and Harley riders recognize this, so when, if there's Harley riders out there listening, when I ride my motorcycle, and you're, and I think any rider realizes that when you're on your motorcycle and you're in the wind, it's called, you're in the wind and you're totally in the ride.
Right.
There's something about that you come off and you shut it off and your head's a lot clearer. James Taylor writes a song, "There's nothing like 100 miles between me and trouble in mind." Nothing like 100 miles. Somebody show me the yellow line. And you get done and you feel better. So those are the two biggies. The other one is a realization when people say, "Hey, how you doing?" I say, "Man, I'm great. You know, my wife and I are getting along. My kids are healthy." Mm-hmm. If your kids are healthy, there's something about that just satisfies you. And it's exciting to have teenagers.
Right, 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 right. But what do you do when it's not going so well? What do you say?
I go back to the woods.
Yeah.
And I talk.
Uh-huh.
I do talk. And the 30 or 60 or 70 that you have,
yeah.
And then there's the handful that you can go to and just lay it out.
Right.
And get right. those different viewpoints of where that might be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That helps me. And right.
And do you just talk in the woods by yourself while you're walking? Because some people do that.
Talk only in my own head.
Yeah.
Not out
yeah,
loud, because yeah. usually I'm pursuing something, so I'm quiet.
Right.
But constantly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, constantly talking and relating and songs. This is great that you've asked for songs, right. because you get a song in your head. Right. And sometimes they're silly songs. Today, the song I was out in the woods in the morning was Sesame Street.
Uh-huh.
It just clicks. And, you know, you can't get it out of your head.
Yeah.
And that was okay.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
You flow with it.
What do you hunt when you... I mean, I want to go there because my sense is that it's, while it may not be the purpose of your walk, it's also a part of your restoration.
Yes, it certainly
so
is.
So what is it that you do?
And I go back, I tell you, it's my dad. And I've told people in art school, there was a lot of people who were sensitive to the fact that you're a hunter. How can you do such a thing? Well, I think there is a part of me, that sensitive part, that if I wasn't raised that way, I might not have become a hunter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I enjoy it, and my father helped me with it, and I hunt. We hunt deer, goose, turkey. I just came back from a moose hunt in Newfoundland. It's just a life experience in itself.
Uh-huh.
And we eat the things that we pursue, that we harvest. We harvest right. these animals and eat them. And it's really the tactical experience. This morning I was with a friend and they had to leave early, but I just followed the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And move through the woods slowly, and you become a part of the woods. Kind of like the ride on the bike, you become a part of the woods. And again, it's not whether you get one or not. I don't need to. You're going to get one sooner or later, and that's okay.
Right.
But this morning was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I was looking forward to seeing you and being on the air. Mm-hmm. I got a clown job later.
Right.
And this was just part of that. And that's what I do.
Right, and I had a conversation with a fellow who used to be a ranger in the Adirondacks, and he said that we shouldn't call it hunting, and it's not a sport. It's harvesting, and we should get permits to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the attitude with which my dad hunted, and we were using 22 rifles from the age of, even before he died, so I was 7, I think, when I was doing my first target practice. But we had a very strict code for how you walked together when you were in the woods, and that continued on with us after he died. But it also was the obligation that when you take a shot, that you make sure that the shot's going to get buried in a hillside. It's not going to go flying over a hill someplace else, so that it's not a clean shot, so that it has an end to itself if you miss. But also, if you don't make a clean kill, that you track the animal, regardless of how big or small it is, because there's no insignificant life.
That's right. Miles and days.
Yeah, well,
sometimes
it feels that way. Yeah, and sometimes it is that way overnight and more. I think there's also a restorative piece, and this is part of what the Eid is in Islam, where they are compelled to slaughter an animal to remember how that portion of their animal protein diet comes from an animal that is killed. And it's not because they take undue pleasure in it, but it's because it's a reverence for knowing where things come from.
Yes.
And you don't need it financially. We needed it because it was, you know, what we fished and hunted was a significant part of the protein that we had as kids, and also what we slaughtered in terms of the animals we raised. But you do it because it ties you back to a reality.
Yes.
Yeah. And part of that's... Anyway, so we're going to... we've come actually closer to the end of the hour than I thought. So our guest on this hour has been Frank Towner. Frank, it's been wonderful to get to know you a bit.
And you.
And,
thank you.
And we're going to cut to another Allman Brothers Band song. And it's Little Martha. Do you want to say something about this? It's an instrumental.
It just moves me.
Okay.
It moves me, and I didn't see Dwayne actually do it except on tape, and it's just a wonderful song that I believe lifts your spirit.
Yes. Frank, take care. Have a good day.
Thank you.
WRFI Walk.